thing to do. We're going to look at six journeys that are undertaken in the Bible. Six. And I'm going to spend 3 or 4 minutes on each one, just outlining some of the interesting things about these journeys. Unwelcome journeys. Journeys people didn't want to take. And saying what was going on, why was that happening, where was God in it, and perhaps what lessons can we learn. I'll just highlight a few points on each of those journeys, and then I'm going to sit here with Kathy and Peter and Jill, and we're going to have a chat about it. And then it's your opportunity to feed in your reflections, questions, things that have arisen as we go through this material, as we think about the journey that we're on as a people of God, as his church in this place at this time. So, are we ready? Number one, first journey ever undertaken, possibly. Adam and Eve. And there was a journey out of the garden. It's a journey they did not want to take. And this is where we get the first occurrence there, very back in Genesis 3, of disobedience, and there's guilt, and there's shame, and there's blame. You know, who did this? It was the woman that you gave me. It's all happening here. There's deception, they're taken in, there's doubt, there's greed. You know, maybe I could have this apple, I could be a bit more, a bit something. There's division, separation, isolation, the fracturing of relationship. All that happened there. And this first journey was a journey of banishment. So, yeah, forced on them. Actually, you're banished from the garden. You have to go away from here. And yet, what's interesting is they were not allowed into this place where the tree of life was. However we understand this, this tree of life, you know, in a sense, God is saying, okay, you've messed up. There's consequences for this. You've chosen this way. You can choose your way. You can't choose the consequences. These are the consequences. But actually, I'm not going to leave you there. You're not going to have an eternity living in this fallen state. Actually, I'm going to put an end to this. And there's going to be a redemption. There's going to be a new creation that's going to be possible. And so, yes, it was a banishment. It was a going out of the garden. But it was preventing them from perhaps, you know, accessing the tree of life, which would keep them trapped in that for eternity, do you see? Preventing an eternity of dishonour, is how I put it. And Eden became a forbidden place. Do you know the angel was set there, the cherubim with the shining sword, the flaming sword, guarding the way so they couldn't come back in. So now actually we've got journeys that you're not allowed to make. The journey of banishment forced on them, and the journey that they're not allowed to go back there. And yet, even in there, there's sort of signs of redemption, because this symbol of the cherubim, we find it in the temple, in the Holy of Holies, the cherubim with the wings touching, the Ark of the Covenant, another place where this symbol appears. And actually, there's something significant about the cherubim. In fact, this was the place where God was living, the place where people would go. In the temple, people would go to the temple to meet with God. And it's the place where you had the cherubim. And maybe the entrance to the garden, maybe they weren't allowed in, but maybe that was it's symbolic of some sort of meeting place. So what's going on with Adam and Eve leaving the garden? Is it a justice thing? Is God actually also being loving within this banishment that he brings to them? Okay. We're doing well. Number two, our second journey from the Bible. How about Joseph? What a journey he was on. He was a favourite son, 12 sons, and he was Jacob's favourite. He had the robe, the ring, and the promise of great things. You know, the dreams he had about the sheaves of wheat and the stars bowing down and so on. Promise of great things in the favour of God. You know, we could think about how some of this applies to us, the promise of great things, the favour of God. And yet, surprised, we've got that word here, surprised, separated, enslaved. Suddenly, what's happening? His brothers are turning on him. He's separated from his family. He's in the pit. Then he's sold into slavery. He's off in rags. But even in that unwelcome situation, God is with him and he doesn't really want to be there. It's a journey he didn't want to go on, but he still had that grace from God, that connection with God, to be able to thrive in that unwelcome place. And he got a position of authority, and he was doing quite well until, you know, he's thinking, yeah, this is good. Hopes are raised, and then they're completely dashed. And he's tested. You remember, it's just slipped my mind. What's the name of the chap who had him in slavery? Potiphar, that's it. So there he is in Potiphar's household, almost ruling his household, great position of honour. And Potiphar's wife quite likes him. I mean, he's an attractive guy, right? And he's doing really well. He sort of stands out from the crowd. And then he's tested. She makes some advances. And what a great guy. He holds firm. He resists. He wins that battle. And the reward for winning that battle is that he is imprisoned, falsely accused. So tested and found true, but ends up suffering for the sake of righteousness. Ends up in prison. 3 years in prison. Forgotten. Interprets a dream. Man gets released. Still nothing comes back. Forgotten for some time until God's timing comes. But all the while, all through this journey of slavery, of seeing the grace of God, of standing for righteousness, of being tested, of being imprisoned, of being forgotten, God is at work building his character. You know, how does this connect to some of us? Certainly when I was young, and I'd just become a Christian at 18, this is a story that really spoke to me very powerful, the story of Joseph. And the whole idea of going to prison for 3 years, and then God called me to Bible college for 3 years. And I said, you may not enjoy this, but it'll be the place where you can build character. It's formational. And actually there's something there in these journeys we don't enjoy where God is perhaps wanting to build character. So this is another unwelcome journey, which you can see, you know, how did this happen? What was going on? But how God was using this all the same. How about this one? Israel, wilderness wanderings, we all know this. 40 years wandering around, going around in circles in the wilderness. So this is after Moses has led them out from slavery. 400 years slavery, enslaved in Egypt, and some mighty acts of God. You know, the parting of the Red Sea. They walked through on dry foot, on dry land. Wow, they'd seen God. And actually, they hadn't deserved it. God had come and rescued them. It was all grace. And they've received this grace again. Where's the connection points with us? You know, these are recipients of grace. They've witnessed God's mighty deeds. They've been beneficiaries of what God has been doing, marked by the presence of God. You know, the pillar of cloud and the fire and the signs of God visiting. You know, that have witnessed the some amazing things. The spontaneous worship. You know, when they went through the sea on dry land, and Miriam sings to the Lord, just spontaneously, I will sing unto the Lord, for he has triumphed gloriously. The horse and rider thrown into the sea. And spontaneous worship. And the leadership that they had. I mean, Moses, what a model of leadership. Clear, courageous leadership. The people had it all. And yet, when it came to it, they crossed the land, they'd sent some scouts to look at the land that God was promising to them to settle in, and they'd seen some big people, and they'd come back and they'd said, look, well, a couple of them had said, let's go for it, you know, Caleb and Joshua, but the other 10 scouts said, no, we are like grasshoppers. Do you see that? The insecurity around who they were, around their identity. So here's the journey God was calling them, drawing them, and yet they're saying, no, not that way. We're like grasshoppers. We're tiny. We're insignificant. We're, we are not that people who are going to be able to do this. And that was the voice that held sway, that tapped into the fear that was preventing people from adventuring with God. And so they made a wrong decision. They said, no, we're not going to do that. we're going to do something else. And God says, fine, okay, this is what will happen. You can walk around in circles for 40 years till this generation passes away and then we move on. So again, we see, you know, God honours the choices that we make. Actually, this isn't God being mean. This is consequences of choices that we have. We're free to make the choice. We're not free to choose the consequences. And all the great things that God has done doesn't necessarily safeguard. Doesn't mean that's all going to be fine then. They missed out on something. Is there anything in this for us? Or what about later, towards the end of the kingdom age of Israel? In the northern kingdom, the 10 tribes there in Israel, just after 200 years or so of being settled with kings, the Assyrian Empire came and they were led into exile and scattered all over the area of the world. And then a couple of hundred years or so after that, the southern kingdoms of Judah and Benjamin, the tribes there, they were also taken into exile to Babylon. And that's the exile perhaps we know a bit more about with the context of Jeremiah and Ezekiel and Daniel, all based around that. And what had gone on? They were a chosen people. You know, they were the ones that God was going to use to bless the world. And yet, they weren't beyond the discipline of God. And they'd developed this temple worship and this form of religion, the sacrificial system and so on, by which they thought, this is how we please God, doing all this stuff. And again in the prophets, we hear, this is not actually what pleases God. What pleases God is the righteousness, the justice, the compassion, the love, so on. And what we find is those things relegated in the life of the nation. Actually, we'll have the form, and we know we've got God's favour, we're God's chosen people. It doesn't really matter so much about this other stuff. That was what was being neglected. And so there were lessons to learn. It came as a big surprise, the exile. It upset their theology in all kinds of ways. And in exile, what happens? Jeremiah says, seek the welfare of the people among whom you live. They're called to be the parish people, the pilgrim people. This isn't your home, but you're passing through, and be a blessing as you pass through. So they were dedicated to blessing their neighbours, even in these godless lands, and discovering where God was, perhaps in surprising ways in those lands. And in exile, they discover new ways. This is where the birth of the synagogue system happened. This is where the birth of all these Jewish traditions of family worship, where the worship was taken away from the temple. They didn't have the temple to gather in. So they said, well, let's gather in the synagogue and just get around the Old Testament scrolls as they had them. And let's learn about who we are and what we're about. And actually, let's develop some patterns of worship just around the meal table at home, so that our children and others can just grow naturally in this faith. They discovered some good ways in exile. And what we find is, even in exile, God was still at work. You've got Daniel being rescued from the lion's den and seeing the favour of God. Shadrach, Meshach and Abednego in the fiery furnace. And God appears with them and rescues them. God is still at work, even in the exile. In some ways, perhaps even more especially. It's wonderful. Preparing the way for the return and the rebuilding of the walls and so on. I've said there, if you're not having fun, you're learning. I mean, there's this sense that actually, sometimes there's some discipline involved in what happens in these journeys. They're unwelcome journeys, but they're necessary journeys so that we can really learn and grow. And this growth of character, actually, isn't that what God is more interested in than anything? That's the miracle, when someone changes, when someone grows in character. And actually, how do we grow in character? It needs to be tested, doesn't it? There needs to be some way. And it doesn't mean that God is necessarily always the instigator of the troubles that come to us in life, but he is the redeemer of it and is able to work in us to build our character, whatever's going on. Maybe there's lessons in this for us. Let's just take a couple more people. How about Jonah? Here's a man who took an unwelcome journey, quite an unusual journey. So he's called to go to Nineveh, and he says, no way. I mean, this is a prophet of God, right? He's hearing God's voice. He recognizes it's God. He knows it's God. This is his calling. This is his gifting. You know, he's got the skills, right? He's got the right experience set, the right skill set. This is his vocation. But there's certain things that God says, and he knows it's God, and he just doesn't like it. And at the end of the book of Jonah, when God has mercy on the Ninevites, he says, I knew you were like that. Oh, I knew if I came here and preached this, you were going to have mercy and they're not going to be destroyed. And he gets all grumpy because I knew you were like that. There's some things he didn't like about how he understood God. God had to teach him some lessons. And he didn't like what God had to say. I don't want to do that. So, but he doesn't, he just ignore it. You know, oh, I'll pretend God hasn't spoken. Or he doesn't deny it. Say, no, 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 that wasn't God. That was something else. Or rationalize it away in some way. He just runs away. It's just like, no way. I'm not doing that. So in the opposite direction, he's on that journey. And the storms come. So he's heading for Spain rather than Nineveh. The storms come. And he says, actually, no, it's me. I'm running away from God. He reckons, at least he takes responsibility. So in this journey, unwelcome journey, almost of his own making, he says, fair enough. Isn't it funny? He'd rather be thrown into the sea than do what God says. It's like, over my dead body, literally. Incredible. But God sovereignly helps the journey along, enter the fish. And character formation, again, what's going on in the belly of the fish as he's calling out to God? And what lessons is he learning? And what we find is at the end of Jonah, there's still quite a long way to go, isn't it? There's still a lot of lessons he's got to learn, and we get the tree growing up and so on. But maybe just baby steps in his character formation, but it's forming. What lessons are there in this for us? Last one. Samson. Another unwelcome journey. Interesting character study, Samson. Set apart for God from his birth. You know, his mum was crying in the temple and desperate for a child, and the child comes dedicated to God. His hair never grows in the Nazarite vow, and his strength comes. You know, specially anointed as this judge in Israel. But what we find out about him is he tried to get away with as much as possible. You know, if you're on one of those mountain roads where you've got the sheer drop down and you drive around like that, do you know that? Anyone ever driven on one of those? Perhaps I've got close in Switzerland. It's kind of terrifying. You get some people who say, I am going to drive as slowly as possible, as close to the edge as I can, because I want to be safe. All right? And then you get people who say, I am going to drive as quickly as possible, as close to the edge as I can, because I like a bit of excitement. I'm not looking at anyone in particular. But actually, in terms of the way Samson lived his life, that was his attitude. How much can I get away with? How close to the edge can I drive without falling off? And let's push it a bit more. Let's push it a bit more. That was kind of his approach. We're told he had a weakness. He liked women. Well, there we go. Make what you will of that. That's simply the comment in the scriptures. But certainly we find he gets stuck in the rut, stuck in this behaviour pattern of just pushing it too far. And here comes Delilah. Recognises that weakness. Prays on it. Is used maybe to get to him. And Jesus calls us to be as innocent as a dove, as wise as a serpent. And it strikes me maybe he was the other way around. As wise as a dove, as innocent as a serpent. But actually he's getting his things a bit confused here, our Samson. And you think, you know, he wasn't that innocent really. He pushed it. And he wasn't that wise. Why did he tell Delilah after however many attempts he had to take his life? And then he told her the secret to his strength. It's crazy, isn't it? What a guy. Not very clever. But in the end, he did push it too far. He was captured. His hair was shorn. His eyes were gouged out, not pleasant. He was chained, humiliated. He lost his strength. He was led into captivity. But it was in captivity where his hair began to grow again. and the strength came and the anointing came. And actually, you know, that was an unwelcome journey, that humiliation, so on. And but where do we connect with this? Where do we perhaps push it too far? Get away with what we can? You know, give in, get stuck in a rut of behaving in ways that we kind of know isn't quite living up to the calling that's on us, but we just can't seem to get out of it, maybe where we've been foolish. But in this unwelcome journey, there's an opportunity for him to stop and allow God to work in him. And you see in all these journeys, there's kind of a common theme here. Actually, for whatever reason these journeys come, God is wanting to work to form the character, to develop us as people within it. And I hope it raises some questions. Here we have it. Six journeys. Maybe there are others. There's plenty of material to draw from in the Bible. But in all these things, we're looking, you know, what does this teach us? Can we identify unwelcome journeys in our own lives, in the life of the church? Can we? Is there anything in these unwelcome journeys that help us to navigate through our own journeys? So I'm going to invite our panel to come and sit. And we're going to have a little bit of a chat about that, and then we'll be able to all join in as well. That's how it should work. And we're just going to explore, you know, who God is in this and how we cope with the journeys that we're going on, and try and embrace this, submit to these journeys when they come. Actually, is that the best way to cope with these things?